Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I am your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that fully backwards compatible co-host, Kyle Krause.
I am backwards compatible all the way to 1986.
See, why aren't more co-hosts like you, Kyle?
I really don't know. That's as far back as I personally can go. I can't go any further back than that because I'll blink out of existence, but...
Talk about return to sender.
Yes.
What have you been up to, my fine feathered friend?
Well, I am on the recovery track from a pretty bad, good, I don't know how to exactly say it, of bronchitis. So, as we were talking about just before we started the show, my sense of smell is completely gone. I can't smell a thing. Like, literally. I work in a machine shop, and it smells like nasty oil and coolant and just, you know, gross stuff all the time because that's a machine shop for you. I can't smell it, so actually, I'm pretty happy about that because
I was gonna say.
I'm tired of smelling it. I really get tired of smelling that. So it's actually a good thing in that instance, but I mean, it's also like ruined my sense of taste because I can't taste much either. I can taste some, but it's like... Why is all the food flavor gone? What happened? Like, I eat pizza, and it's like, well, this is not the same kind of pizza. I can't eat this. It's still good, but it's like weirdly diminished sense of taste. It's weird.
Are you a picky eater at all?
Not really, no. That's my girlfriend's domain.
Okay, because I was going to say you could get away with eating anything now because you can't taste it.
Well, yeah, that's true, maybe. I can still feel spiciness, though, so I'm not really a super spicy guy. A little bit's fine, but not a whole lot. What have you been up to, Ian?
Oh, I know I say this every show, but I have been busy with, and some of it is brand new, too, so... it's been crazy. One thing, though, and I just got back from Savannah, Georgia, where we did the Sega Fan Jam. Great little show. If you were out there and you got to say hi, glad I was able to see it. But I'm glad to be home because now I can get back to work.
Lots and lots of work.
Lots and lots and lots of work, which is good.
Yes.
I would rather have lots of work than no work because... Us freelancers, we live and die by the paycheck.
Yes.
More emphasis on the die part.
And I would assume all of this is secret stuff you cannot talk about at all.
Sadly. But as soon as I can, you will be hearing me shout it from the rooftops.
Is any of this stuff Sonic related?
You can't talk about it.
Okay.
But like 99% of it is not.
Oh.
And none of it is... Well, no, that's not true. I was going to say none of it's comic related, but that's a blatant lie. So, yeah, there's lots and lots of things going on.
Excellent. Good. That's good and, you know, it still kind of sucks because it's a lot of work. But, you know, it'll be worth it in the end, I think.
Well, see, the problem with having lots of work is it cuts into your free time,
right,
which means less time for video games.
Yeah, that's a problem.
But the good thing is it means you have more than just the money for food and rent, therefore you can buy video games.
Yeah, but you have no time to play them, so they just sit on your shelf and rot, like all of my video games.
But that doesn't stop us from actually purchasing said video games.
Right. My Steam library is a testament to that. It's a shrine of unplayed video games.
You're going to be Rorschach and you look down at all your Steam games and say, no.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Now, the latest temptation that's coming around the corner in our topic of today's show is the mysterious Nintendo NX, or as it has been revealed, the Switch.
Yes, indeed.
We had a very tiny teaser after Nintendo said nothing on it for a long time.
Yeah, like a year and a half.
We're not going to get anything new until next year, and then it launches in March?
That's the rumor.
But we've got enough that we can, you know, start to speculate and talk on it. So,
yeah,
you've seen the trailer.
Indeed.
What are your thoughts? What are you happy about it? Are you nervous about it? Are you excited about it? What is the Kyle take on the switcheroo?
Well, the news has been coming for so long that, like, 99% of the console's features and all of the rumors surrounding it were already pretty much revealed, like, ages ago. So when it came to the actual trailer, I didn't see anything that I wasn't already kind of expecting, just based on all of the leaks and some of the speculation and stuff that had been going around, like the Eurogamer leaks that pretty much called practically everything, like, months beforehand. So it wasn't surprising me, really. It was not an unexpected... The console itself and its features wasn't really unexpected to me, just because I'd been following the news of it, at least cursorily. I hadn't really dove into everything, but, you know, a lot of this stuff really gets around quick when you listen to the podcasts I do and stuff like that. So I really wasn't surprised. Am I excited for it? I don't know. I'm not unexcited for it, I suppose. It's just, like, it's not... I don't know enough about it. What I want to see is some games, because the footage we saw in the trailer, those may not be representative of the games that we ultimately get for the thing.
They actually straight up said that it was not actual game footage. It was more demo mock-up stuff.
Right, exactly. So, like, yeah, 99% of those things we may never see either in that form or at all of the games that they showed, except for Breath of the Wild and probably NBA 2K17. If that comes to the Switch, it probably will look like that. And the same thing with Skyrim Remastered. But even Bethesda's been like, we haven't announced anything for the Switch yet. They're very coy about saying that, yeah, Skyrim's coming to the Nintendo Switch. It's like, no. That's just a demo. It's weird. So I'm cautiously optimistic, I suppose. But I don't know. What do you think of it?
I am, and I feel somewhat treasonous for saying this, not impressed and very concerned.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely understand that.
Because on the one hand, just looking at what was presented in the demo, I'm greatly concerned about the controllers that attach to the docking screen. Now, Nintendo is known for making solid products. You've got NESs that still run. You have that Game Boy that was famously blown up in the war and still ran. You could throw your 3DS down the stairs and it will most likely still work without a hitch. So the idea of having the two controllers snap on and off repeatedly, it being a Nintendo product, I'm willing to see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
But when you add that many moving pieces to a high-end electronic device, immediately I get concerned, because what if the latch breaks? What if you lose one of the pieces? They're not going to sell them individually.
Getting lost is definitely a big concern, because obviously they're not wired.
I'm also concerned about the size of it, because the overall device looks like it's about the size of the Wii U pad, and that is a very comfortable thing to hold. It's a very nice controller.
Yeah.
Now, it looks like the screen is significantly larger, which I like, because I can barely use the Wii U pad screen. It's tiny. My old man eyes can't really see it that well.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
But losing that much space to the screen means less room for the controllers, and I wonder how well it's going to fit in the hands. I could be just being pessimistic. Maybe it all fits in really nice. We'll see.
Yeah, you have to actually get a hold of it to see.
I'm also really concerned about the very nature of the Switch, the big touchscreen, which I'm assuming it's a touchscreen.
Yeah, we haven't actually even gotten confirmation that it's a touchscreen, last I heard.
I would assume it is.
But yeah, it probably is.
But just by virtue of moving it in and out of the dock, the dust that's going to get into the dock, if you don't put it straight into the dock, carrying it around, that screen is going to get messed up.
Yeah. That's...
Now, there are things that you can put on top to protect the screen. I'm sure they will have MacBook-styled covers that you can put on it. But then you have to take it out of a cover to put it into the dock so that you can play your game.
Yeah.
I'm also really questioning about how it will be implemented with the rest of the system, especially with Breath of the Wild, because they've showed off the Wii U Pad's functionality with Breath of the Wild, which I'm excited for. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to playing Breath of the Wild on the Wii U. But the Switch makes it look like the console is the pad, and that when you take it out of the dock, it's no longer streaming to the TV.
Right.
So is there a separate way that it streams to the TV? Does it also work as a pad?
As far as I'm aware, it does not.
So how is that going to work?
Does Breath of the Wild actually feature tablet anything? Because
yes.
From my understanding was that, at least at the E3 demo for Breath of the Wild, the Wii U gamepad didn't do anything. I think it just cloned the display.
No, because what the stuff I saw was it used the gyroscope within the controller to use certain special abilities. You selected your gear and such from the menu on the screen, and the map itself could be marked. I forget how many number of times, but you could put in little notes to yourself on stuff that's in the giant overworld. It looked pretty intrinsic to the gameplay.
Huh. Well, the gyroscopic features, I'm sure, will be in the Switch. I'm sure that will have a gyroscope in the controller. But the other features, I'm not so sure of. So, I don't know. That's something to kind of wonder about, because they haven't said, it can stream to the TV.
Right. It seemed very decidedly that it goes in the dock to go to the TV.
Right.
Or it's its own device.
Yeah.
And this is something that gave Aaliyah concern, because she's very excited at the prospect of Splatoon 2.
Right.
But the secondary feature, primarily the map and seeing in real time where your teammates, where your opponents are, able to quick jump to various points on the map and such, that second screen is actually a very intrinsic part of the game.
Yeah, that's a
it
big...
It adds a whole level to the tactical side of things. It adds to the gameplay itself.
Yeah, that's a big part of that game.
So if you take that out... How is it going to work?
Yeah, they'll have to... If that feature is not available, they'll have to, rethink the design a little bit, I think. So, the way Splatoon 2 plays might not be quite the same as the first Splatoon, so we'll have to see, though.
Which raises a red flag right there, because Splatoon is almost flawless in design.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest IP the Wii U has, period.
Right.
The Wii U, I love the system. I've got a decent library for it. But it was not the strongest outing Nintendo had.
Mm-hmm.
Splatoon kind of stands out above the rest, head and shoulders. So the fact that they showed it off associated with the Switch tells me that they've got faith in the franchise, which is great. But...
Yeah, it's very curious. I'm interested in seeing what they do with it, but I'm cautious about it. It's I don't know. Nintendo hasn't steered me wrong yet, really. So I'm still looking
virtual
forward.
Boy.
Still looking forward to. You know what? I kind of like the Virtual Boy. I'm weird like that. I'm that guy. It's not great. It's not great at all. But it's interesting. The technology behind a Virtual Boy is actually pretty cool. It looks it looks bad, but the technology is neat. Anyway.
Now, my biggest concern, hardware is, hardware. We'll see it more when it comes out, because that's just the nature of it. Mm-hmm. But what has me more concerned than anything is the Switches seems to be designed around the idea of mobility.
Right.
Play it at home, take it to have your friends, do kind of a Wi-Fi LAN party. That's neat and all.
Yeah.
But is it really viable in today's market? Because mobile gaming is either phones or the 3DS.
Yeah.
The Vita was dead on delivery because, for one thing, the data charges for it were ridiculous. You already are paying for your phone's data plan. Why are you going to pay for a separate data plan for your handheld device?
Uh-huh.
If you want to play with people online, you can do it from the comfort of your own home.
Mm.
If you want to just have a quick bit of gaming when you're on the go, you've got the apps on your phone now, which, sad to say, are much easier to pick up and play and put down. Traditional video gaming is meant to be a time investment, and I don't mean waiting for the download patch to come through or waiting for Matchmaker to find the three other people on the continent. I mean sitting down and devoting to something like you would a book or a movie, in something that's long-term entertainment. Taking it on the go is kind of against that. And your phone does a whole lot more than just game. You can get on your social media. You can call somebody. You can look up information. You can order pizza. Your phone does so much on the go that the Switch can't even remotely compete.
Yeah.
Why are you going to carry around a tablet-sized device that doesn't act like a tablet? All it does is game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and for the novelty of it, I can understand that, but I'm worried that the novelty will wear out very, very quickly.
Well, we don't necessarily know what all the features of the Switch are. Obviously, its main focus is going to play video games, but it can still be kind of an entertainment device. I'm sure you can connect to public Wi-Fi and, you know, watch Netflix and whatever on it. I'm sure it'll have some apps like that. So it's not a complete... It's probably not going to be just a complete straight-up game machine. That's obviously its focus. But it will have some, at least some of the features that you get on, you know, tablets and phones. They're obviously going to be severely diminished. But, you know, it's still going to be a little bit of a multi-use device, most likely. That would be my guess. But I would agree with you that it would just be better just to carry around a full-featured tablet or even just a smartphone and be able to use that instead, just because they're obviously going to be, you know, more fully featured and in some cases maybe even more powerful. We don't exactly know what's in the Switch yet, but...
Right.
I'm a little surprised that there wouldn't be any streaming to the TV, through the dock, just because the Switch is based on the NVIDIA Tegra chip. That's what they're using for the graphical power and everything, is the NVIDIA Tegra. So, and the NVIDIA Tegra was used in the NVIDIA Shield, which is a tiny handheld Android device, basically, that allowed you to stream games from your PC over Wi-Fi to it. So I'm a little kind of surprised that they either have no plans to have it be able to stream to the dock and be able to use the gamepad as a secondary screen or anything like that. So I don't know. That may be something that they are either working on or going to be revealing in January. I guess we'll see.
And I can't really just give them the benefit of the doubt and say, oh, well, that's an obvious way of using the technology, because this is the same company that hadn't created a unified user account through their system until well into the Wii U's lifetime and well into the 3DS lifetime.
Yeah.
So I'm just worried that their newest device is competing with themselves, because the 3DS is the strongest handheld out there.
Mm-hmm.
And with phones, and you cannot compete with phones on a strictly gaming device.
Right. Exactly. So, you can't do that.
And you could get by on having the power of your exclusive titles, and Nintendo does have the strongest original IP staple of any of the companies, but they are notoriously slow with putting this stuff out.
Yeah, especially nowadays with everything having to be HD. High quality, that's what's expected. So now game development takes longer
exactly.
to compensate for that. So, yeah.
I mean, if the fact that they delayed it to March so that they had a stronger launch library, I think is a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, you miss the Christmas market, but you also don't come out, stumble, bonk your head on the microphone and say, oh, okay, we're going to have games soon. Okay.
Yeah, we have a repeat of the Wii U.
Yeah.
Or the N64, which had two games for 1996 Christmas, and then like no games until finally Wave Race 64 came out a few months later. And then they had three.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget what happened to the Saturn that never got a proper Sonic game.
Right. Yes.
So there are lots of concerns on my end. Mm-hmm. I'm not chomping at the bit for it. Yeah. I'm hoping that January will bring new news that makes this podcast completely irrelevant. And I'm like, oh, well, I should have never doubted. But they've really got to work for me on this one. Mm-hmm.
There were two more interesting things that caught my attention in the trailer. Or one interesting thing that caught my attention in the trailer. And one interesting thing that caught my attention about the specs of the machine. The interesting thing about the trailer was that it featured absolutely no children. Just 20-something millennials. And 20 and maybe early 30s. It's like, well, Nintendo's finally figured out their target market, I think. All the people who grew up playing NES.
Yeah, pretty much.
And SNES. It's like, yeah, you finally figured it out. It ain't the kids buying your games, because kids have no money.
And kids have already moved on to the phones and such.
Right. Yeah. A lot of kids are still playing, or a lot of kids are playing, just playing games and watching everything on tablets and phones now. Yeah. So I think they have, you know, tapped into that market, I think, a bit with this, or at least they're trying to. Which is probably the smartest move they could make, because that just seems like the most likely demographic to be going, yeah, I want to play Nintendo games. Kids aren't really going to be, some kids at least will be, but I think most kids won't be all that into it, just because, obviously, they wouldn't be able to buy it for themselves, and they have all sorts of other options that they probably prefer, but.
Now, that being said,
adults would be more into it. Young adults.
Right, but those young adults are going to be having kids of their own if they haven't already.
Right, exactly.
You have to renew your market. So, while I agree, they definitely need to be putting a lot of effort into capturing the attention of our demographic, the ones who grew up and are diehard fans of their material, they also need to get the kids in on it, because we're eventually going to age out.
Well, that's true. They will catch the attention of kids just by virtue of the fact that if the young adult parents are interested in it, they're going to buy it, and their kids are going to play it, and their kids are going to get into Nintendo, and it's, you know, just going to keep going. So in that way, I think
this is a Nintendo house. You're going to sit down and you're going to play your Mario.
That's right.
Oh, Dad, I don't want to play stupid Mario. I have my phone. You will not use that language in this house, young man.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. the other thing that caught my attention was the specs of it, mainly the fact that they're using an NVIDIA chip this time. Nintendo's been using AMD graphic hardware since the GameCube, and all of the major consoles have been using AMD hardware, or I take that back. Microsoft has been kind of, I think they had like an... Okay, they had Intel in the original Xbox, they had like a PowerPC chip in the 360, and now they're using an AMD APU for the Xbox One. PlayStation, yeah, Sony didn't use AMD hardware until the PS4, but Nintendo has always been, well, not always, but since the GameCube, they've been partnered with AMD for all of their graphics hardware. So it's really kind of interesting for them to suddenly just jump ship and head on over to NVIDIA. NVIDIA's technology is technically superior to AMD's right now. And what probably caught their attention was stuff like the NVIDIA Shield, which has that streaming technology and really good power in the mobile space. The Tegra chips that NVIDIA has are probably some of the most powerful out there for gaming in mobile devices. There aren't many devices that use them, but it sounds like the Nintendo Switch is going to be one of them. So it's interesting. I guess Nintendo just decided, you know what? NVIDIA's got better technology, so we're going to go over there. For what we want to do, we're going to go over there. So it's just kind of interesting how that partnership seems to have switched.
I see what you did there.
Yes.
Another aspect that I had forgotten about that somebody brought up was that the move over to the SD cards instead of game discs or what have you.
Ah, yes.
Was actually a potentially very smart move because the cards themselves are writable. Therefore, any patches, any extra download material can be put directly to the card instead of hogging up space on the actual device.
Yeah, maybe. The 3DS uses similar technology, and they don't do that.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see if they do that. That would be nice. I mean, the 3DS does have save files on the cartridge, at least. For most games, as far as I can tell. But they don't necessarily write patches or anything to it. So I guess we'll see. But that would be really cool if they could do that instead of having it take up internal space. Internal storage is kind of a concern, though, on the Switch, just because we don't know what it is and how much it's going to have. The 500 gigabyte models of the PS4 and the Xbox One, from what I understand, that's not nearly enough for the size of the games on those consoles.
Mm-hmm.
If you have even just a couple games, like just a few, you'll fill that up pretty quick because games now are like between 40 and 80 gigs or more, depending on the density of the disc. So if you're downloading all your games, then you're going to run out of hard drive space really fast. So I don't know what the size of the Switch games will take, but hopefully it's a little bit more than that. I guess we'll see. But it doesn't look like a very, very hard drive is going to fit in that thing, so I don't know.
Oh, God, nightmare scenario. Everything is saved on a cloud.
Oh, no. No, please no. That would be horrible. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
No.
I understand the appeal of cloud servers and saving things to a cloud, but I call me a Luddite. I don't trust it. I don't like it.
I have my stuff backed up to cloud storage. I like having the ability to sync between my devices and all that, but I don't only keep it on the cloud. I also have a local backup and local storage of it, and yeah, it's just better that way. And obviously, any really sensitive stuff, I'm just like, nah, I'm not going to put that publicly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, nah, that's just going to stay with me. Thanks.
So, while we wait for January and March to tell us whether or not we're excited to buy something or not,
yes,
let's have someone who's getting something right now.
Ooh.
That's right. It's time for the newest winner of the Bumble Raffle. Now, the Bumble Raffle is a contest we have every show where you have a chance to win a signed comic from me, which, if you're listening to the show, that probably actually means something. If you are a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you are automatically entered into every single show's contest. If you are not a patron, you just need to write in for every show. Email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. You will be automatically entered once you write in. If you get a confirmation email, you know you're in. If you didn't, trust me, I saw it. I just didn't have time to reply. But everyone who writes in gets put into the next episode coming up. So, the winner of this episode's Bumble Raffle is
Justin G.
Congratulations, Justin. We will be getting in touch with you to get your contact info to send you a book.
Excellent. Enjoy that book, sir. You earned it. All right. Are we ready to get on into some Q&A action?
Let's get into the Bumblecast Q&A.
All right. Don't forget, you can ask your questions using the email, bumblecast@yahoo.com, or hitting us up on Twitter, @KyleJCRB or @IanFlynnBKC, using the hashtag Bumblecast. Wasn't there another way, too, that I'm just forgetting?
Well, if you are one of our lovely patrons at patreon.com/bumblecast, you can ask it anywhere in the comments section, as per the episode. You can send us a message. Just talk at us. We will pick it up.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I knew I forgot one of them. It's just like, wait a minute. What are we doing? I knew there was one more. Anyway, Let's get to some priority Q&A from our lovely patrons over at patreon.com/bumblecast. This first one comes from Connell T. Since your writing style is so good at connecting plot points and characters from different games slash timelines, how would you handle something like Castlevania with all of its different games?
Oh, Lord. what a terrible night for a question.
Yes.
That is an excellent question. I am not super well-versed in the Castlevania lore, so I'm not going to be able to give too precise of an answer, but I would have to take a look at where everything is supposed to fall or where it says it falls. I know that it doesn't quite sync.
The thing about the timeline in Castlevania is that most of the games do not run concurrently with each other.
Right.
So they're all very disparate. Some start in, like, the 1600s. Some are in, like, the, like, late 2000s. It's all over the place.
Right. And some of them are questionably canonical. Mm-hmm. I know the creator threw some straight out.
Yeah.
While fans want it in. So, I don't know. It would really take a lot of time to research, you know, what games are supposed to come in what order, where the conflicts are, what the creator's intention was, what the fan's desire is, and just kind of work it from there. In terms of how to portray that story, that would depend entirely on how the project was arranged. You know, if it was a straight-to-trade type of thing, you could do it as individual stories. If it was an ongoing, I might try to tackle it chronologically. I don't know.
Yeah.
It all depends on how much time and space I was given with the project.
I'm just really sad we lost Castlevania Legends for Game Boy, as far as the timeline goes. It's chronologically, it's supposed to be the first game in the entire series. And the main character is Sonia Belmont, the very first Belmont. And she's cool. And I'm kind of sad she's not canonical anymore. So, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So, I would put that back in, personally, but that's just me. There's only been, like, three female protagonists in the entire Castlevania series. Sonia, Shinoa, and, what's her name from, Maria, I guess, from, Symphony of the Night, and, what's her name from Portrait of Ruin? I'm totally blanking.
Charlotte?
Now. Charlotte, yeah, that's it. Yeah, just those four. So, makes me sad. I am disappointed. That's okay, though.
Now, how I would tackle Castlevania 64 and its multiple storylines.
Okay, there's another female character in that one. I forgot her name, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
That's just a monster in and of itself, so I don't know. I would love to get the chance, but that would kind of require Konami to want to do something with Castlevania.
That would require Konami to want to do something. And if it's not pachinko or reusing assets from Metal Gear Solid 5, they have no interest.
Mm-hmm.
And this next question comes from Fancy Fool. I want to apologize to Fancy Fool because this is an older question of his before he became a patron that I did not catch sooner. So sorry about that. But we're going to answer it now. So here we go. If you're allowed slash willing to answer this one, what job does Vanilla have?
I figured she was a chow rancher. Professional chow rearing.
Huh. Yeah. That fits, actually.
I mean, don't take that set in stone. Sega could come around tomorrow and say that she's a concrete contractor and, you know, that's what she is. But I figure she and Cream know a thing or two about raising healthy, happy chow.
Yes. That's a pretty good idea, actually. I like it. All right, let's move into some standard Q&A. This one comes from Tsurugi. I can't remember if this question's been asked already, but can we expect to see graphic novel compilations of the Sonic comic origin stories in the near future? It'd be great to see and read the stories that we've seen so far in one book.
I would love to see that myself, especially since tracking down all the individual SCO installments can be a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because they are so short, there isn't enough of them to warrant a graphic novel. So I keep, floating ideas out there of doing more SEOs so we have more content so we can get it to trade. Maybe have them all reprinted in one volume of the digest or something, maybe? Shrug? Question mark? I want to do more of them because they're fun, but the idea is there, definitely, but there's just not enough content to do them yet.
All right. Yeah, that'd be cool to have those all in one place. We need more of them. So do more of them, Ian. Just do it. Just do it. What are you waiting for?
Oh, if I just wrote what I wanted to write for the Sonic series, oh, lordy.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't come up for air.
All right. Next question comes from Red Hammer. Hey, Ian.
Hi, Red Hammer.
Near the end of Act 1 of Worlds Unite, do the mayor and Team Dark die? Was that intentional? What was the original plan? If it was intentional, you're a monster.
Yes. Yes, I am. It's too bad we already did the Halloween episode.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. When we were putting together Worlds Unite, then editor Paul Kaminsky said that the stakes were not high enough. And I said, what are you talking about? The two planets are merging and dying. That's pretty high. He says, no, no, no. We need something more personal. We need someone to die. And I'm like, well, going in that it's got the cosmic reset already built into the story because we had Classic and X Mega Man's meet.
Uh-huh.
That can't happen. So I figured, all right, if I've got to build a death cheat into this, I'm going to make it blatant because I hate death cheats in comics. This important character died and then they come back later. I hate it, hate it, hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if I have to kill somebody off for the shock value, which I don't like, but whatever, I don't always get my way. That's how it goes. If I have to kill somebody, I'm going to make it so blatantly obvious that it's a death cheat that people will go, oh, it's that trope, and just roll with it rather than going, oh, no, they killed so-and-so. And then, 4 months later go, oh, I was schnookered. I hate that. So that's why I made it Team Dark specifically, because nobody would believe that I was actually going to kill Team Dark. It's obvious I wouldn't do that. And then I blew up the mayor because he was easy to blow up. Nobody would care. Nobody got the joke about him anyway, so boom, he's gone.
Do the... that's funny. Do comic readers even, take death seriously anymore? I mean, just in general, I guess. It doesn't seem like they would or should, because it is so overplayed at this point that death is very fleeting in most comic books. It's a joke now at this point, really.
In my experience, it's kind of a mixed bag, because you have the younger readers who haven't gotten used to the revolving door.
I guess that's true.
I mean, there actually were some readers who, when they got to that point in Worlds Unite, thought I had killed off Shadow and couldn't understand how I got away with that. And it's like, oh, my sweet summer child, you will learn.
Yes.
You will learn.
Yes.
But otherwise, those who have become jaded to the entire process, it feels more like the characters are getting hit with a, injury in major league sports. It's like, oh, well, they're out for the rest of the season. They're dead. Right. Just put them in through physio, they'll be back. Yep. Or, oh, darn, I really enjoyed that character. Now they're dead for a bit. Well, I hope they don't ruin them when they bring them back to life with a revamped design and power set or whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I always look at death in comics, it's just like, they'll be back in a couple months. It's fine.
Yeah,
maybe a couple of years if they really want to go that far. Death is very... For the most part, very, very fleeting.
I mean, the last character death that I can think of that actually felt like it had some weight behind it was the death of Superman with the fight with Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
Because that one, they really sold you on the idea, because for 4 months, he was gone.
Right.
They canceled the book. And then when they started to bring him back, they did the four separate Supermen.
Mm-hmm.
As the spinoffs, and then they brought back Clark after that. So it was, there was a story to it. There was more that came out of it than just the shock value of Superman dying.
Yeah.
And they built up to it, too. The story leading up to the climactic battle is this series of escalation. It isn't just a flash in the pan, oh, he's dead.
Mm. Not like a certain movie we just
talked about. Compare that to the New 52 Superman who died, and did you know he died?
No.
Do you care that he's dead?
No, is he back? I think he's back now. Well, obviously he's back because they did the rebirth thing, but still.
Right, but that's a different Superman. That's a Superman from another reality. So.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Comic books. Man, comic books are weird.
So that's why I try to stay away from character death in general, unless it's going to stick.
Okay, good. And this last question comes from Big Smile. On Bumblecast episode 22, man, going way back here, you said Sega Japan gave you notes about Sonic R being canon. Could you please tell us a bit more about which other games are said to be canon in these notes?
I don't like talking about internal note stuff because I really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really say for certain what is and what isn't. Because I was under the assumption that Sonic R was not canon. Huh. It wasn't until I got the note that it was that I was like, oh, well, that's fun to know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was under the assumption that the Game Gear games were not canon to the game series. But some of them are going to be canon to the comic series with adaptations. So what is canon is a big question mark. I mean, do you mean game exclusive? Do you mean comic exclusive? Do you mean what's okay today or what's going to be okay tomorrow? It really isn't a concrete kind of thing.
I always just assumed that there wasn't really a canon with Sonic. Or at least when it came to canon, they just went with what they needed at the time. So, like, if suddenly they wanted to say, hey, we're going to do Knuckles Chaotix 2, so that means Knuckles Chaotix is canon. It's like, okay, then that's fine. It doesn't really seem like there's just an ongoing canonical thing with the Sonic series to me. It's not like the Zelda timeline or anything like that. Or the Castlevania timeline, going back to the first question. It's more like just kind of like they're individual games, and if they fit together for a certain plot and certain storyline in the future, then we'll just go with that.
I think it's more along that line, but at the same time, Sega and specifically Sonic Team are remarkably receptive and responsive to the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And the fan base is ardent about having a tighter continuity, more cohesion in the storylines. So I could see that trend changing. But, you know, big asterisks here, I don't know that for certain.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have a direct line to Sega. Everything I get is through the editor who gets it through approvals, who gets it from someone up top. And there might be even more layers to that. So I don't know for certain. I just am going by what I've seen over the years.
We know that 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles, CD, and 4 are all interconnected.
Right.
It's never been stated how those are connected to the Adventure series, which are obviously all connected. Well, the two of them, I guess, Adventure 1 and 2. Probably Sonic Heroes is also in on that. And
well, it's got to be because it's a continuation of 2, and it leads directly into Shadow. So.
Yeah. So I got Shadow, and then you got 06. And yeah, most of them do kind of lead into each other, but there's obviously a bunch of spin-offs, like, you could probably just slot Sonic Spinball between, like, 2 and 3 or one or something. 1 and 2. I don't really know. Sonic 3D Blast. I don't know where that would fit. Maybe after 1.
Well, see...
No, because Knuckles isn't it, so it'd have to be after 3.
I would look at the classic era games as not really a straight line. After a certain point, I mean, obviously, that's 1 true. And 2. But CD and Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which I take as its own entity, are Blast, all of them. I see them more as these are the adventures that happened during this time period.
Uh-huh.
And then once you get to the modern era, Adventure 1 is obviously the starting block.
Mm-hmm.
And then the games that obviously go from there follow it. Whereas the others, your writers, your storybooks, those are, again, more kind of adventures that happened around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you can't sit down and do this as a day-by-day, month-by-month, then this happened, then that happened. That just isn't going to work.
Yeah. This is side stories. It's not really chronological, which is kind of what I've always thought, was just like, okay, they're not... Release order may not necessarily indicate story order, which obviously is true for most long-running franchises, but still. And that's it for the Q&A this week on the Bumblecast.
Before we wrap up the show, we're going to give a shout-out to all the patrons who make this show possible. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us for so long. We really appreciate all that you've done for us over the year. Let's give a shout-out to Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, Deus Miles, Yams88, Mike B., Fancy Fool, Connell T., Daniel L., Samuel P., Justin G., congratulations again, Jennifer R., Andrew F., John M., S. Yavarovich 9X, Alex P., and James K. Once again, everyone, thank you very much.
You are all the coolest. You're the coolest people I know.
If you want to follow what I'm doing, go over to BumbleKing.com. That's got my portfolio. That's got all my contact info. That's got my daily blog feature. It's just an unending fount of Flynn. That sounds really gross. Kyle, save the show. Go. Take over.
If you want to follow what I'm doing, you can find me at KyleJCRB on Twitter. I'm making somewhat of an effort to be a little bit more active on there. I'm just really bad at Twitter, I think. I'm not very talkative on there other than just reposting KNGI stuff. But if you're interested, you can also head on over to KNGI.org where you can find archived episodes of this show and many others, including my show Game Fuel and Nitro Game Injection, my other shows. And, of course, I stream those live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Over on 8BitX at 8BitX.com. And this month is a very special month because it kind of fits in with our discussion today because it's Nintendo November. I'm going to be doing episodes dedicated to Nintendo all month long. So I had a poll going over on KNGI.org and of different Nintendo game series that people wanted me to cover for Nintendo November this year. So I'm going to have episodes dedicated to Kirby, Donkey Kong, Mario Kart, and Fire Emblem, Golden Sun, and Advance Wars. The Wars series, I suppose it's usually called. So if you are interested and want to hear some awesome remixes from great Nintendo games, head on over to KNGI.org and 8BitX.com on Saturdays and check it out.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast Episode 30. We'll see you in a couple weeks for Bumblecast Episode 31. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
You're a smart boy. You know how to do things.
Okay, if you insist. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com. Available as a pay-what-you-want download.